I played the editor Mark Devonport listening to this. Good morning to you, Mark.
Morning, Stephen.
Can I just clarify one thing? Is it your understanding, Mark, do we know if the DUP negotiating team did have an outline of a deal that included an Irish Language Act?
Well, my latest understanding has shifted since the time that I was talking to you and I was talking about a merger of the three bills. As I got more details there last night, and those were three bills, one that would deal with Irish, one would deal with Ulster Scots, and another which would deal with sort of respect and culture in a more general sense. The picture that I got is indeed that was the framework. The respect and culture bill would have come in first, the Irish and the Ulster Scots afterwards. But all three would have made their way into law. So from a Sinn Féin perspective, the Irish Language Bill would have become an Irish Language Act, Acht na Gaeilge, and they would have been able to say, look, that's there, it's on the statute books. So that was a clear win from Sinn Féin's perspective. Now, when we were talking previously and I mentioned a merger, what apparently would have happened is a very kind of convoluted legal process, is the Respect and Culture Act would have been what is called a consolidated measure, and the Irish language and Ulster Scots legislation would in some ways have been kind of subsumed into it, but only after all those measures have become law. And so that was, I suppose, a way to kind of hide the DUP's blushes. But I think that the bottom line was that the Irish Language Act would have become law, it would have been on the statute books, and that was very hard for the DUP to live with.
Okay, so if you clear all the noise away from this then, Mark, of how it would have been achieved, it's your understanding that there would have been an Irish Language Act.
Yeah, right? An Irish Language Act that would have become law, would have made its way all the way through and would become law. Yeah?
So what does it say, Mark, about Arlene Foster's authority within her own party as a leader, that's what she wanted to contemplate happening, and she couldn't get that through her own party?
Well, I think clearly the negotiating team, including Arlene Foster, including the likes of Simon Hamilton, Edwin Poots and so on, weren't able to sell it. At times, people were saying, oh, this could be a back me or sack me moment, but they took the temperature from the wider DUP, Assembly Group, MPs and so on, and they realised that this was a difficulty. So I think that they were looking to maybe try and shift the balance of the overall package, maybe not in relation to the language bit, but maybe to get wins elsewhere, the military covenant and so on. Couldn't get that out of Sinn Féin. And they just decided, not just, I think, because of their DUP colleagues, but also maybe because of a lot of emails and things that they were getting, that there was so much concern out there, they simply couldn't move with it. So it is a bit of a blow, I think, to her authority. But she obviously decided that it was a less dangerous course of action than trying to press ahead without the necessary support.
But don't they? We're talking about incredibly experienced politicians here that know how their own party work, and they know they could write on a piece of paper instantly the type of people from within their own party who are going to take them on over things like this. So what does it say, Mark, about their judgment that they thought they could get this through, and they didn't even come? This is 13 months of this.
Well, I think they've maybe been dancing on the head of this pin for so long, trying to sort out all these things of clauses that might tie acts together and ways in which everyone could claim a win out of this, that they maybe did lose a bit of perspective on how this would go down within the wider community and maybe the wider party. So I do think that was a difficulty.
Didn't they prepare their base?
I don't think they fully prepared their base. And the other problem is...
Why not?
Yeah, well, the problem is that both sides had talked themselves into some pretty big holes back at the start of last year. And they were trying to extricate themselves, but there was no real elegant way out of it. And we ended up with this convoluted kind of mixture of bills. And when people who weren't involved in those discussions came and looked at it, they said, look, clear away all this glitter. There's still an Irish Language Act in there. Yeah. And we can't sell it to our people.
Yeah, but let's clear away all the glitter. So if you're telling me it was your understanding that Arlene Foster, as the leader of the party, was prepared to accept an Irish Language Act going into legislation, you know, was Gregory Campbell? Was Ian Paisley?
I think those are good questions to ask. I certainly think some of the MPs weren't prepared to accept it.
And weren't they brought along? Wasn't this explained to them as these negotiations were continuing over month after month?
You get different noises from different people as to how different members of the party were kept on board with all of this. You noticed the change of language when there was this emphasis on no freestanding Irish language act, and that was obviously an attempt to say, well, this is different because this is part of this package of measures.
I don't know if you noticed this morning, Mark, but Gregory Campbell on Good Morning Ulster today, he was back to losing freestanding or standalone. He was back to saying no Irish language act, and the DUP had made that clear all along. Actually, no, they hadn't. Because the DUP absolutely changed their language from Irish Language Act to freestanding.
Yeah, they shifted. They had shifted from no Irish Language Act back before the Assembly campaign in the spring of last year. And then I think Arlene Foster pointed out in an interview she did with Mia that in August she talked about being prepared to legislate for the Irish language, but that we all took as being a kind of wider cultural act. And then I think they finally had shifted along to actually have an Irish Language Act, but within the context of this wider package. So, yeah, there has been a shift there. But when they finally came to it, and I suppose if you want to mount some sort of defence of them, I mean, Sinn Féin will say, look, they agreed a deal, then they backed out, they couldn't deliver it. If you want to mount any other kind of defence, you'd have to say, well, all of these things are on the basis of nothing's agreed until everything's agreed. This was an understanding that they said they'd take away and put to their party, and it didn't wash.
And in terms of Sinn Féin, did they, in the interest of trying to restore devolution, did they give up anything? Were they prepared to demonstrate compromise, for example, on equal marriage, something very difficult for the DUP, given what they believe about same-sex marriage in Northern Ireland? Did they give any ground? The Irish Language Act, did the Sinn Féin not even prepared to contemplate, Mark, letting that go in order to get devolution in some way, letting it go, easing it slightly? Well, or did they dig their heels in and say, it's our way or no way?
Well, I think that they basically took it that the red line that they were trading for the Irish Language Act was their stipulation after the RHI scandal that they wouldn't share power with Arlene Foster as First Minister. They were going to drop that and potentially risk a little bit of criticism from some like People Before Profit over that. But the prize for dropping that in return was the Irish Language Act. My understanding, and again, we have yet to see this deal being published, and so I have to put in the caveat that all these reports, like the reports I was giving you over the last few days, might just be a bit of a partial view. But my understanding was that they didn't get a vast amount on same-sex marriage. There might have been some talk about reviewing the petition of concern and its working. There might have been an understanding that somebody would have tried a private members bill in the Assembly if it had been reconvened in order to see if that had got through. But I don't think that Sinn Féin got a lot on same-sex marriage.
So hold on a moment. So on same-sex marriage, despite what Sinn Féin had publicly promised, no return to the status quo, it might have been exactly that.
So I think the big win from Sinn Féin in terms of no return to the status quo is Irish language. I don't think they got anything very definitive on same-sex marriage. And I suppose that they might have thought, well, the tide is running in favour of this. In any case, it'll come through. And they have never been quite so definitive in saying no same-sex marriage, no assembly, in the same way they said with the Irish language. Now, I have to sort of put the caveat in. I haven't seen the actual document, and so we have to always make sure that we're not misleading the public, because I'm aware that some of the stuff around mergers and consolidations was so difficult in terms of the Irish language. I don't want to mislead the public on that one.
Of course you don't. And there would be one way for the public not to be misled at all by people trying to speculate about what's in it. Why don't they show us what was in it? Why don't they show us what they walked away from?
That would make your job and mine a bit easier, wouldn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, but it would also allow the people who actually keep these people in jobs to understand the detail that would affect their lives. Mark Devenport, thank you.